Well, hey, we're in week two of this little mini-series we're doing that looks at vision. And so I did a little research this week. Why do you think people go to church services? Huh? I mean, they did a study actually in 2018 about why do people go to church? Why do they go to a church service? And here's the top 10 reasons that people gave why they go to church service. Right? Most of them is like, I want to get closer to God. A lot of people do it so that their children will have a good moral foundation, you know, in life. A lot of people want to become a better person. They want comfort because they're going through difficulties in their life. Half the people find the sermons valuable, which is encouraging or not encouraging. I guess it depends on how I'm feeling that day, right? They want to be part of a community of people, a family, a faith community. They want to continue their family's religious obligations, which means in any given Sunday, about a third of the people are going because they have always done that. That's what they do. 31% go because they feel obligated. Either because they've been guilted into it or they feel like, you know, I have to do this or God's going to strike me dead or, you know, my spouse. Some people do it to meet new people or to socialize. That's code word for find a spouse, right? And then 10 is to please their family, to please their mother, father, spouse, partner, all that stuff, okay? Now, that's very interesting to me about why people come to church. Because another study, especially among younger people, said, well, why are you not part of a church? I thought, well, that's interesting. So what does that have to say? Here's what they said. Church is irrelevant, full of hypocrites. God is missing when I'm there. You can't have any serious conversations about the doubts that you have. I'm actually not learning about God, and I don't find community. Kind of interesting, because some of those are directly opposite, right? You will hear many people say that religion and the church are dying off. Do you know that is simply not true? Now, you'll hear this all the time, especially in the West. We hear that the church is an outmoded institution, that more and more people are walking away from the church and walking away from those kind of things. It's actually not true. It's certainly not true outside of our country. Do you know, get this, in East Asia, people who follow Jesus will have grown from 11 million Christians in 1970, which was 1% of the population, okay? And in 2020, 50 years later, they estimate 171 million Christ followers in East Asia, over 10% of the population. And by the way, you'll also hear in our culture that what happens is, as people get more sophisticated, more learning, they abandon faith and they abandon church, right? Because now we're enlightened and we have intelligence, and so we don't need all that faith stuff anymore. It's actually no correlation at all, because this growth in East Asia happened as they've modernized and as they've grown in their intellect. Get this one. In 1910, so 100 years ago, there were 12 million people in Africa, the entire continent, were Christian, 9%. In 2020, there are 630 million. It's incredible. Almost 49%. In 2015, another study said the percentage of atheists around the world is actually declining. And even in the U.S., most of the decline in faith and religion and church is actually happening in churches that are a little more liberal, have no set belief structure. And people are abandoning it because they're craving something. They want something. Now, why does all that matter? You are surrounded by people in your jobs, in your neighborhoods, your coworkers, your family, your friends, who are looking for answers. They want meaning in this life. And they're searching all over the place for it. They desire something more. And they can't find it in that simple, naturalistic explanations of life. And we have the answer and the good news. But how are people ever going to get where they are to where they need to be? Well, here's the thing. When we're going through this, we said in Hope Chapel, right, our whole vision, the reason we exist is so that people can come as they are, right, to be part of our family, right, and then be changed. In other words, come no matter who you are, no matter what you're like. We are inviting people into that good news that they're searching for, to say, hey, it doesn't matter if your life's a mess. Doesn't matter if you think everything's good. Come on in. Be a part of what's going on in, because when you do that, you will grow and you will be changed to be more like what Jesus designed, which will bring you greater joy, satisfaction, and all those other things, okay? And so what we're doing over these 3 weeks is we're looking at the kind of the three pieces of that, because the question always is, well, if you're invited to be changed, how are you changed? And last week, we looked at this idea, well, how do we love Jesus more? Right? How does that is something that should be increasing in our lives? And this week, we're going to look at, well, how does this impact when we say, well, one of the ways we grow is to change is to love other people. And the next week, we're going to look at loving the world. You don't want to miss that one. I'm actually going to be looking at a great story from the New Testament, a crazy man who Jesus threw all these demons out. It's a great story. So come on out for that. But today, I want to look at this idea of what does it mean to love each other? If we're going to be changed, if we're going to grow, if we're going to actually be the kind of people that all of our neighbors, our friends, our community, our family, they look and say, well, I know I need something. You got something. What is going on? I need to know more. How does that happen? What does that look like? And really, how do you practice then loving people the way we know we should so that that happens? That's what we're going to look at this morning. So I'm going to go back to the same statement we started with last week. And it was from Matthew. It's recorded in a couple different places. And just to refresh your memory, this is a time the Pharisees themselves, they were getting irritated with Jesus as a teacher. And so they kept trying to trap him. They would get him in these conversations. They would try and bring up these things that they thought would get him in trouble, right? They were trying to trip him up to make him say something that would cause all the people to turn against him. And so this particular incident starts like this. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, which is a different religious sect, the Pharisees all they got together. And one of them, an expert in the law, tested Jesus with this question. Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? This is what is known as a slow pitch softball question, right? Every Jew knew the answer to this question. If you had gone to Sunday school, you know anything, you knew the answer to this. It was the number one commandment in the Jewish religion. And Jesus knew that. So he replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, to which every Jew would have said, okay, good, you got that. And I can just picture that the Pharisee is already with his follow-up question that's going to trip Jesus up. Except Jesus doesn't stop talking. And he says, and the second is like it. And they're like, second, what are we talking about second? There's one command, there's no second. And Jesus is like, no. Second one is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and all the prophets, everything you guys think you know, hang on these two commandments. Now, what's shocking wasn't so much that Jesus was adding a second command, but what he was doing was he was elevating these two things to be the same. Because it's not second commandment, you know, the other is like it. It's not that this is most important and this is second. It's just second in order. This one I said first, this one I said second. What he's really saying here is simply this. You cannot love God and not love others. He was doing this. In doing this, he says, you cannot separate the way you love God and the way you love people. You cannot pull those two things apart. They're inseparably tied together. You can't say, oh, I love God, and I can't stand all the people around me, and I treat them like dirt. It doesn't work. So the question that comes to my mind, I think of this, and I go, okay, well, they were listening to this. It was all kind of new. He was challenging all these. What does that look like? Does that mean I have to be nice to everybody? Really? We stopped to get ice yesterday on the way to a party, and the person in front of the line was trying to pay for food, and it was taking forever. I didn't have nice thoughts. I mean, is that what this means, right? That we're supposed to love people? We're supposed to have nice thoughts to all these people? I mean, does it mean I have to do the same thing for every single person I meet? Well, Jesus knew there would be questions, so he decided he was going to clarify this. Now, this is sometime later. The disciples had actually watched Jesus kind of live this way. They'd watched him travel. They'd been traveled with him. They saw how he put other people first. They saw how he loved people the way that he was supposed to love himself. They kind of observed this. They watched this in his life with people, and they heard him teach other people about loving other people. And then the night before he was dying, and we've told this story before, but I think it's so pivotal. They're having dinner, and Jesus gives this instruction that clarifies this, and it clarifies it in the most painful way you can imagine, because he leaves no ambiguity, no doubt, no wiggle room on what this looks like. They're having the Passover dinner. If you remember the story, he had just washed all the disciples' feet. right? So it was already uncomfortable in the room. He just finished washing their feet, and they're all like weirded out by this. Like, we don't even know what to say now. You know, how do we get the conversation back to the Eagles? Because this is all really weird, and everybody's silent. No one knows what to talk about. So it's all strange, and the room's all weird. And Jesus begins talking. My children, talking to his disciples, I'm going to be with you only a little while longer, which they didn't understand at all. They didn't get this. You will look for me, and just as I told all the other Jews, so I'm going to tell you now where I'm going, you can't come. And I can see the disciples going, this makes no sense. We go with you everywhere you go. Let's eat, right? And then he says, a new command I give you. And you can see everybody in the room perks up. Oh, something new, right? Because they've been listening to Jesus say the same things over and over and over and over and over again for years, right? And all of a sudden, he says, a new command I give you. They're like, well, what's his new command? This should be amazing. Guys, pay attention. John, get out your notepad. You're going to have to write this down, right? Come on. So they're all ready for Jesus to give this new command. And he says, love one another. And they say, Jesus, that's not new. You've taught this forever. In fact, you said that. Remember that when they tried to trap you and they said, you know, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor yourself? I mean, loving one another. This is not really new. And Jesus says, hold on a second. Not done. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And they didn't even understand the depth of what he was telling them. Not yet. They would. And then he finishes the statement by saying, and you want to know? It's by this that everyone and all those people in your neighborhood and your coworkers and your neighbors and the people that you hang out with, the people you play softball with, the people that you do hobbies with, do you know how they're going to know that you're my disciples? Because you love each other the way I love you. And here's what Jesus was saying, and here's where I want to land this morning. How you love is what marks you. How you love other people is what sets you apart. How you love other people is what makes the difference. It's what puts a little bullseye on you or a highlight on you and says, this is who you are. It's how you love people. Now, this seems crazy because most of us don't think this way. But see, it's not actually how theologically correct we are. It's not how many sins we avoid. It's not our political views. Jesus says, you want to know how you're a good follower of Jesus and how you grow? It's how you treat other people. It's how you love them. See, because the world around us, they all know how to love. Everybody knows how to love at a basic level, right? It's called self-focused love. We love when people love us back, right? Everybody does this. You know this because everybody in your work does this. Someone loves me, I love them, right? There's this reciprocal relationship. Everybody does this. Dictators do this, right? Horrible people do this because we all know if you love me, I'll love you, right? It's kind of a reciprocal thing. Everybody knows how to do that, okay? But then there's kind of a second tier of love, which is the other's love, where we're putting other people first. This is not the exclusive domain of Christ followers. You know altruistic people around you, right? They want to help the people in other countries. You know, they sponsor children. They serve over here. I mean, they genuinely want to help people. They want to do good things for other people. You know, they kind of feel good doing it, and they're genuinely interested. There is an other love. And Jesus said, look, that's all great. But what's going to set you apart is third level love, which is loving God love. And that's what will advance the kingdom of God. And that means loving other people the way God through Jesus loved us. Now, and by the way, you know this is true. I have yet in my entire life heard someone leave a church, say, I want nothing to do with God or the church because people love me too much. Right? That never happens. Usually it's the opposite. People didn't love me enough. People didn't take care of me enough. Never the other way around, right? I mean, there's something unique about that. And so love became the distinguishing mark of the early church. It's actually the Apostle Paul was one of the early apostles. He traveled extensively, planted churches all over the world. And he was teaching what it meant to follow Jesus and what it looked like to love God. And he came to this church called Philippi. And he plants a church, he spends time there, and then later he's off, he's doing other things. He's actually in prison now because he's in prison for the gospel. And he hears reports that they're no longer doing the things he had taught them to do. They were no longer loving each other the way Jesus is instructing. And so Paul says, okay, I got to write these guys a letter. I can't go see them. I'm in prison. So let me write them a letter and tell them exactly what this looks like because I think they've forgot. And this is where I want to spend the remainder of our time. Because he wrote this. It's in the middle of this whole conversation. It's a great letter. It's in what we call the book of Philippians. But he wrote this. He's talking, these are Christ followers. He's saying, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but rather in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. And all this is, all Paul is doing is saying, do you remember the command Jesus gave? Love each other the way I loved you. He's saying, let me show you what that looks like. That's all he's doing. He's not giving you anything new. He's saying, that thing that Jesus said to do, you want to know how to do that? Here's how you do it. And there's two things that are huge, and there's more. Here's the first. If you guys want to love people so that people understand that you're a Christ follower, then be preoccupied with other people. Our natural tendency is to be preoccupied with ourselves. Right? I mean, we don't even have to try that. That's easy, right? In fact, it was funny. I was at the start of every year, I always look through my journal because I journal when I do my quiet time, my devotional time, and I write stuff down. And it was funny because I was looking at some of the stuff and I thought, man, the word I and me appears a lot in my journal, right? There's this focus of, you know, oh God, this is what's going on in my life, this is what I'm thinking, right? And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but there is this tendency as people to be preoccupied with all of me and my stuff and my problems and everything else. But if we really want to be seen differently, we have to be preoccupied with others. So Paul uses a couple interesting terms here. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. They're two different terms. Selfish ambition is simply this, acting and doing things in a way that elevates me or my feelings, whether it's at the expense of another person or not. Right? This is all about me. It's what I do. It's for me. There's what advances my cause in the world. And vain conceit is anything that makes me look good or feel good about myself. So I act in any way that will defend my interests, my image, my comfort, or my desires. He's saying, that should not decide how you live. Don't do that. It's not to be your preoccupation. I'm supposed to be preoccupied with others. Do you know why that's true? I saw this quote. I thought this was really good. It is impossible to have a genuine relationship with someone you're always asking something for. When you're in a relationship with someone, and you know this because you've been on the receiving end of this, every time you get to them, they always want something from you, right? Those are called one-sided relationships. And when someone only ever wants to be around you because of something that you can offer, whether it's advice, comfort, help, you know, physical, all those things, if that's the only reason you're in a relationship, it's one-sided. And yet this is exactly what we do with God and other people because we're preoccupied with ourselves instead of others. Okay, consider this. I won't say this is coming from any experience in my own life, but let me give you a for instance. It's been a long day at work, okay? Started really early. You had to get up early. It was one of those nonstop days. You ever had one of those, right? Where just you can't even get a chance to take a breath because just from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, right? Meetings and emails and everything else. You had contentious people to deal with who just weren't cooperating. They kind of made it ornery for you that day. Your computer system crashed. The thing you were working on, you had to redo it. It was a needless bunch of effort. You hit horrible traffic on the way home. Right? One of those days you're like, oh my goodness, I want to move to Montana because Jersey is terrible, right? You get one of those days. That's every day in New Jersey, by the way, right? When it comes to traffic, not overall. And after all that, all you want to do is walk in the door, collapse on the sofa for a little bit, maybe turn on the TV. After all, you deserve it after a day like that. And then you walk in the door. Your spouse hasn't even really started dinner yet, and they blurt out, oh, I'm so glad you're home. It's been such a long day. Can you help make dinner? Or can you take the kids? I need a break. I got to grab a shower. Can you watch the kids for the next 45 minutes while I go get myself ready for dinner? What do you do? How do you respond? What attitude do you present? See, a person who's preoccupied with themselves will defend. Hey, I had a long day too. Give me some space. I'll help you in a little bit. I need my alone time. A person who's preoccupied with themselves might do it, and they'll roll their eyes and go, oh, fine, yeah, go whatever you do. Just be quick. I'll do this. The person who's preoccupied with other people walks in and hears that and goes, oh, yeah, go ahead and do that. In fact, take your time. I got the kids. I'll get dinner started. We got it, doll. It's good. Because there's an instinctual reaction for you when you're preoccupied with other people to be thinking of their interests and viewing the world through their eyes, seeing what's important to them and what they need. And we take those interests and we say, that's more important than mine. And my friends, that is hard. And yet Paul says, I want you to value other people above yourself. That means, and get this, okay? That means getting to know what they need and what they want, what they desire, what's going on in them, and realizing that they and their desires are more important than you. Most of us are okay with landing in the place where we're equally important, okay? And Paul said, that might be true, right? This is not a statement of what's actually valuable. It's a statement of attitude, of perspective that says, you know what? I don't really care if we're the same importance, we have the same values, we had the same rough day. I'm acting and living like you are more important than me. You know, it's interesting. One of the first conductors that was born and educated in the United States to receive, you know, worldwide acclaim was a guy, you probably heard of him. His name was Leonard Bernstein. Okay, he actually conducted the New York Philharmonic. He directed concerts by some of the leading orchestra. He wrote symphonies. He wrote music for Broadway hits like West Side Story and some of this, right? So he's just an amazing guy. And in his obituary in 1990, the New York Times called him one of the most talented and successful musicians in American history. Okay, amazing guy. Well, before he died, Bernstein was asked once what the most difficult instrument to play was. And do you know what he said? He said, second fiddle. He said, I never have problems finding a first violinist. But to find someone who can play second with enthusiasm, that's a problem. And I thought, what a picture of how we live this life. And yet that's exactly what Paul's saying. He's saying you need to excel at being a second violinist, not a first. And I'm telling you, if we lived this way, single people would date differently, married people would stay married, and they'd be happier, work would be smoother and more joyful, friendships would flourish. How you love is what marks you, and that means being preoccupied with others. And quite honestly, if we stopped there and everybody lived that way, it would utterly change our life. But there's one other thing that Paul says that he's not done, and he takes this and he elevates it and he makes it so clear that we have nothing to hide under. Here's what he does. By the way, this is what Rick Warren said about being the second fiddle, right? He said, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Love that quote. Paul goes on. He's just continuing, right? He's following right up, right? Don't do anything with selfish ambition. Consider other people better than yourself. He says, in fact, in your relationships with each other, okay? So I want you to picture that he is standing here. He's talking to every single person sitting here. He's saying, okay, as you relate to each other, your attitude, your mindset, the way you think should be exactly the same way that Jesus thinks. That means in all of your dealings with your friends, the people, your kids, your coworkers, your neighbors, strangers, people you like, people you don't like, you're just all this stuff, before you could even ask, he's saying, like, that's the kind of attitude. You're supposed to act like Jesus. And before they could even ask, he's writing a letter. He's like, and let me tell you what that looks like. Do it like Jesus, who, being in very nature God himself, in other words, Jesus was God himself, he had the power of God, the position of God, he was exalted as God, even though that's who he was, he did not consider equality with God, that position, something to be used to his own advantage. And rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant and being made in human likeness. See, Jesus chose not to use all that for his own advantage. Instead, he became, found an appearance as a man. He humbled himself, becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Do you realize that? God had power. Jesus had glory. He deserved to be worshipped. He could have made anything happen at any time. He deserved every single person on the planet to stop what they were doing, to bow down, because every single one owed their life to him, owed their very existence to him, owed him everything they've ever had. His judgments couldn't be argued. His word was law. And instead, he chose to be a small, lowly person to suffer hunger and tiredness and thirst. And he purposely came and said, I'm going to allow myself to be killed. Do you know why? Because he valued your interests and my interests above his interests. He valued your needs and my needs above his. And Paul says, that's how I want you to love each other. I would say it this way. Leverage what you have for the benefit of others. First of all, be preoccupied with others. It means be thinking about them first, looking at things from their side, understanding what it is they need, and then leverage what you have for their benefit. Because that's what Jesus did. Jesus said, look, this is all the things I have. I gave everything up that rightly belonged to me, and I didn't leverage my position or my power or who I am on my own behalf. In fact, I leveraged it all for you. I did it all so that you would benefit. So to love people the way Jesus loved us is to leverage what we have for the benefit of other people. And that's huge because that means loving other people is not about simply avoiding certain behaviors. You know, it's not about just not doing certain things or not saying something that we shouldn't or not being mean. That's just not enough. It's not good enough. You know, you can't go home and say, I'm so proud of myself because, man, I wanted to swear and cuss them out. I just kept quiet. Woohoo, right? That's not what he's talking about. He's saying that's not enough. In fact, what I want you to do is leverage what you have for the benefit of others, and every one of you has stuff you can leverage. You can leverage your time and your energy for other people. You can leverage your money for the benefit of other people. You can leverage the talents you have, the skills you have, where you don't use them just to benefit you, but you use them to benefit other people. You can leverage your ideas, your training that you pass on, that you use for other people, where you demonstrate, you walk alongside. You can leverage your experience, the things you've learned, the things you've done. You can leverage that for other people. 1986, there was two Soviet ships. They collided in the Black Sea. It was a passenger ship and an industrial-like tanker. The passenger ship had over 1,000 people aboard when it sank within, I think it was with just under 20 minutes, had over 1,000 people, like 1,200 people aboard. The 800 people were ended up rescuing from this cold waters of the Black Sea, but 400 people died. When they investigated the accident, they found out that both captains knew they were on a collision course for 45 minutes. 45 minutes. But both figured the other person should turn. And they didn't turn. At the last second, it was like, oh, and it was too late. Boom. Both the captains went to prison, actually. They both had the power and the control to make a change for someone else, but said, nah, do my way. If we run our relationships like that, they will end up exactly the same way, with collision and chaos and death. And it won't be any different from anybody else that you know. Remember, when Jesus is saying all this, he's sitting in a room with disciples, less than 24 hours away from giving away his life in a horrific fashion, and all of these guys were going to run away, deny that they know him, and abandon him. And he knew it. But I can see him. You know, he's saying, hey, Matthew, do you remember how we met? Matthew's like, yeah, I remember. Yeah, you remember that? It's pretty crazy, wasn't it? Remember you were an outcast? Your family hated you? No one wanted anything to do with you? You didn't have any friends. Do you remember what we did when I met you? Yeah, I remember. What did we do? We went to your house. We had a party, didn't we? Yeah, I didn't accuse you or condemn your behavior. In fact, Matthew, that's how I wanted you to treat every single person that you encounter. Hey, Nathaniel, remember how we met? Oh, yeah. You know when you dissed my entire family, my hometown, everything about my past? You remember that? Yeah, I remember. Remember how I invited into you my life anyway? Yeah? That's how I want you to treat everybody you meet. Hey, Peter, you don't even know it yet, but you've been one of my best friends, and you're going to completely turn on me when I need you the most. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to restore you in our friendship. And Peter, that's what I want you to do with everybody else. I'm guessing he could have gone around the table for 12 different men and said the exact same things. How How you love is what marks you. So consider this. If you want to be changed, if you want to get out of your current spiritual dryness, your current spiritual funk, if you want to become more like him, if you want to become more mature, if you want to be more like Jesus, then just start treating the people he loves the way he loves them. It'll change you. Think about it. When I was a mess, I had no thought for God, he loved me. When I acted in rebellion towards him, he still died for me. When I was indifferent towards him, he sacrificed for me. When I sin and make mistakes, he still loves me. When I get angry and I fight against him, he walks alongside me. And when we love other people that way, it changes everything. So just do these two things. If you just kept these two things front and center in your relationships, hey, I'm going to be more preoccupied with other people than myself, and I'm always looking to see, what do I have? What can I leverage that actually benefits the people around me? If we do nothing but those two things, it'll change everything. But I'm telling you, it's not easy, because it's going to force you to be vulnerable, and it's going to be costly. But I wonder what would change. I wonder what would be different in our marriages if we loved our spouses the way Jesus loved us. I wonder how our relationships with our children would change if we loved them the way Jesus loved us. What would people say at work if we love those we work for or those who work for us the way Jesus loved us? What would happen if we love those who had a different faith, a different race, a different sexual orientation, a different political viewpoint, like God loved us through Jesus? What would happen if we love those who were our dead-on enemies the way Jesus loved us? Stanley Mooneyham said this: love talked about can be easily turned aside, but love demonstrated is irresistible. I think if we did this, most issues would be resolved in our world today. So when we love other people the way Jesus loved us, we will be changed. Let me close with this quote. You've seen it before. It's from C.S. Lewis. I think it's fantastic, one of his best. He said, "Do not waste your time bothering whether you love your neighbor. Act as if you did. As soon as we do this, we find one of the great secrets. When you are behaving as if you loved someone, you will presently come to love him. If you injure someone you dislike, you will find yourself disliking him more. And if you do a good turn, you will find yourself disliking him less." See, Jesus knew. If we love other people the way Jesus loved them and act that way, it will change us and we will become people who are changed. So, here's your question for each day. How can I love blank the way Jesus loved me? Fill in the blank. Doesn't matter who it is. If you have to start with an easy person, start with an easy person. But eventually the Holy Spirit's going to drop a name in that blank that's pretty tough. And you're going to say, how can I love that person the way Jesus loved me? Then do it. I guarantee you'll never be sorry.